It's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Welcome along to Wednesday's edition of the 9 till noon show. It's Michaela Clark in this morning again for Greg Hughes. We've lots to come on the show, including our usual Wednesday segments, such as Wellness Wednesday and Business Matters with Chris Ashmore, all coming up a little later. And we'll also be getting an update, as you heard Donna Marie Doherty reference in the news there. Donegal doctors met with Health Minister Jennifer Carroll McNeil yesterday, so we'll be getting an update on that meeting. You can get in touch with the show today by calling us on 074 91 25000, or you can text or WhatsApp 086 60 25000, and also email comments at highlandradio.com. We're going to start though with a look at the papers today and that story that I referenced about the Donegal doctors and the surgical hub. It's great to see it on one of the front pages this morning. So the headline in the Irish Daily Mail: patients are left at risk over grubby Lowry deal on hospital. Clinicians brand sitting of surgical hub in Sligo over Donegal flawed and deeply damaging. A deal with the Lowry Independents to locate a surgical hub in Sligo is under scrutiny after clinicians branded it flawed and deeply damaging. Fianna Fáil TDs are calling on Micheál Martin to publish the details of any backroom deals in exchange for Independents' support in government. The call comes after Junior Minister Marian Harkin confirmed that a new surgical hub for the North West will be located in her constituency of Sligo as a result of her lobbying efforts during programme for government talks, despite doctors calling for it to be situated in Donegal. The recommendation was met with sharp criticism from Donegal-based clinicians, who labelled it flawed, unjustified and deeply damaging. A number of Fianna Fáil TDs have raged against the potential use of Sligo. Now, that's where the story ends. It does say turn to page six, but unfortunately there's no further details on that story in page six. But it's good to see it on the front page, and we'll be speaking to one of those doctors who met with Minister Jennifer Carroll McNeil a little later. And those comments were made, I'm sure you heard, on the show last week whenever Greg was in conversation with Marian Harkin. And they have been met with such backlash, and rightly so, given the desperate need for the surgical hub here in Donegal. Looking now to the Irish Times, former swim coach Gibney arrested in Florida. Former Olympic swimming coach George Gibney has been arrested in the United States on foot of a Garda request to extradite him to Ireland to face charges over sexual abuse of multiple children. Gardaí have been investigating a number of fresh allegations that Gibney sexually abused children in his care as a swimming coach several decades ago. A request was made by the Garda to the US State Department to extradite Gibney. Gardaí are seeking to have Gibney brought back to Ireland to face more than 50 charges related to alleged historical child sex abuse connected to his time as a swimming coach. I'm not sure if anybody ever listened to, I think it maybe is a BBC podcast, Where's George Gibney? And it's a great listen and gives the whole historical background, and they actually travel to Orlando where George Gibney had been living. And they confront him and put these allegations to him, but he refuses to comment. But it's a great listen, and it gives the historical background of the case. Turning now to the Irish Sun, and lawyers for Nikita Hand accused Conor McGregor of perjury and demanded he apologise to her for claiming he had new evidence she was assaulted by her ex-partner on the night at the MMA is alleged to have raped her. The fighter had detailed this claim in affidavits but withdrew it as a ground of appeal yesterday because his legal team said it was unsustainable. McGregor, who was not in court, is appealing the High Court ruling last November that he assaulted Miss Hand and the subsequent decision to award her nearly €250,000. McGregor had provided affidavits by Samantha O'Reilly and her partner Stephen Cummins, former neighbours of Miss Hand when she lived in Drimna, to the Court of Appeal. The couple had claimed they witnessed Miss Hand's then partner Stephen Redmond assault her during an argument on the night of December the 9th and 10th 2018, the night McGregor assaulted her, and that this assault was the probable source of injuries she has suffered. I know everyone has a right to defend their name, so we'll see how that plays out. right. That is back in court, and I'm sure it will continue now for the coming days. Looking now to the Irish Daily Mail. An appeal of a court decision to quash the A5 road upgrade is being explored, Minister for Infrastructure Liz Kimmins has said. The Belfast High Court last week disallowed an executive decision to proceed with the A5 redevelopment on the basis it breached Stormont's commitment to reach net zero carbon emissions by 2050. She said they are working through the possible grounds for appeal before the proposal is brought to the executive, but would not be making any knee-jerk decisions. The minister added that it is my intention that we will look at pursuing an appeal that will require executive agreement. It just raises so many questions that, you know, that High Court challenge was successful, and, you know, was this not looked at beforehand that it would possibly exceed the carbon emissions? And also the question is, should it just get the go-ahead despite the carbon emissions? Can we pitch climate change against a human life? I know, obviously, climate change is very central to life going forward, but there's just been so many road deaths along that route, and, you know, should it just get the go-ahead? Can they make cuts elsewhere? But then on the other hand, it would set a precedent if it does go ahead, you know, that so many people could claim there's a risk of human life despite carbon emission targets not being reached, that it could go ahead. So there's so many factors feeding into that. But hopefully sense will prevail and there can be some resolution found and that much needed piece of infrastructure does get the go ahead. The Irish Independent today: heat forces Eiffel Tower to shut while Barcelona records its hottest June ever. Barcelona recorded its hottest June in over a century. The summit of the Eiffel Tower in Paris was closed to visitors and hundreds of French schools shut yesterday as Europe sizzled in its first major heat wave of the summer. Health warnings remained in effect in several European countries. The worst was felt in southern Europe, while punishing temperatures were forecast to reach 40 degrees Celsius in Paris and to stay unusually high in Belgium and the Netherlands. The abnormally hot weather is exposing millions of Europeans to high heat stress, with temperatures in June more typical of July and August, said Samantha Burgess of the European Centre for Medium Range Weather Forecasts. This June is likely to be among the five hottest on record, it said. Speaking of climate change, that is the result of it then, and there's people just cannot cope with the heat. Is this something that would put you off travelling to a certain country if you knew, like, these heat waves are becoming more and more common? If you knew that temperatures were going to be about 40 degrees, would that put you off holidaying somewhere? And I suppose the stress it puts on the body, and people have different health conditions, especially for the elderly, it is a struggle in the heat, but I absolutely love the heat. So I don't know if it would put me off. What would put me off if it was freezing? I just don't know if I could bring myself to travel anywhere that had sub-zero temperatures. In the Irish Daily Star, comedian and musician Gar Noon announced he's made the difficult decision to cancel his gigs for the rest of the year. The Mayo man, who has been open about his previous mental health struggles, released a statement about the news on Instagram yesterday evening. Last month, the TikTok star said he would be taking a small social media break, but has now said he will likely be offline for a while longer. He wrote, "After a lot of thought, I'm very sad to have to make the difficult decision to reschedule all of my gigs for this year. It was not an easy decision to make. Many of you will be aware of some of the issues I've dealt with in the past, and unfortunately over the last few months I have been dealing with a lot of these issues again." I think it's great, although what Gar Noon is obviously going through is very difficult, but I think it's great that he's using his platform and he's speaking out and saying more or less, you know, I'm going through this, it's okay to take a break. And it shows that, you know, social media isn't for everybody. I know so many people, you know, we talk about the different platforms, like Instagram kind of shows you this life that everything is perfect. Then maybe TikTok shows you the reality of some people's lives more. And I suppose deciding yourself, you know, Instagram's giving me anxiety. I'm not, you know, it's kind of bringing me down, looking at other people's lives or other people, and apparently they're succeeding in life, or they have this perfect home and they have this perfect wardrobe and they look perfect, and that's very damaging for somebody who maybe lacks confidence And I suppose Garan Noone has such a platform, and, you know, seeing comments and people bombarding him, I'm sure, with messages all the time. Like, there's no downtime for him. So it's good to see him making that decision. Finally, for now, the Finn Valley Voice. There's a lovely tribute on the front page this morning. The communities of Erne and Castlefin gathered for an all-night vigil at St Mary's Church, Castlefin, on Saturday, following the passing of a beloved Diocese of Derry priest. Father Oliver Crilly, PE of Erne and Castlefin Parish and a former parish priest of Greenock, died on Saturday, June the 28th in Letterkenny University Hospital at the age of 84. His Requiem Mass was celebrated on Tuesday the 1st of July at St Oliver Plunkett's Church in Clady, followed by his interment in St Mary's Church Cemetery, Lavey. Just last week, Father Crilly celebrated the Diamond Jubilee of his priesthood, marking 60 years since his ordination, a milestone he commemorated from his hospital bed due to recent illness. Last week, the government announced the main location of the 1916 Rising would be redeveloped in order to attract more people to O'Connell Street. If implemented, the GPO would continue to be used as a post office and museum, while commercial units would also be allowed to open there. There has been much backlash to these plans. I'm joined now by Inti representative in Donegal, Mary T. Sweeney. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Michaela. Good morning, listeners.
So, Mary T., you're opposed to this proposal?
Oh, completely. Absolutely. It's a sad day that we're at this stage. First of all, they tried to get rid of our Irish history, and now they're going to attempt to get rid of an iconic building. When you think of the leaders of 1916 who took over the GPO on that fateful day, yet they held a vision for a free and a unified Ireland. They held that dearly at a cost of their lives. And to think that this government would even contemplate selling off, it seems that they have more interest in commercialism than republicanism anymore. And it must be stopped. It has to be stopped.
And do you think that their argument is it's a massive building right in the centre of Dublin, that, you know, they have a museum there in existence already, that possibly it would encourage more tourists if there were commercial units there?
There's a huge problem in the whole committee in relation to Dublin City Council. From doing the research that I have done on it, Dublin City Council have a budget in excess of 1.4 billion, I think it is, every year. And Mr. Kent, the guy that was in charge of the marketing for the GPO, they applied to have banners put up to advertise, and they were refused permission. You know, there's an awful disconnect between the organisations in Dublin City. Micheál Martin is calling for a band of people to be appointed to review a 10-year plan. He needs to get a 10-year plan for the Gardaí on the streets, because Mr. Kent has said that's clearly a security concern on the streets of Dublin, that visitors' numbers are dropping. And we need to address, that's the elephant in the room. When you look, it's 25,000 square metres, the GPO. And when you look at a building half the size in the Titanic Quarter in Belfast, it's generating over 800,000 visitors a year at a revenue of 5.9 billion profit. After tax profit. You know, how could this fantastic money that could be really invested to support the people of inner city Dublin that have no homes, to support the people, you know, to really appreciate their history and their culture, and still have money in profit instead of selling out to commercial enterprises?
Now, I haven't been to the museum, so I'm unaware of how big it is, but do you believe that there is room for it to be expanded to take over possibly the whole building? Is that something that you would feel would be a better proposal?
Completely. And there's other aspects in relation to the back of the building that are more modern. They're not as the neoclassical that was designed at the front. There was extensions committed at the back in relation to parts of the building. And Micheál Martin has suggested they should become office space. Yet a survey in 2024 in Dublin suggested that there was an abundance of office space in Dublin, over 18% unnecessary office space. So this has not been well thought out from the beginning, and it needs to be reconsidered. And the focus must be on, remains a symbol of freedom for the Irish Republic. And the interactive facilities that are there in the small museum should be expanded. And with the buildings at the back, it would be fantastic to see it as a theatre or as art spaces. There's a huge reduction in art spaces. Artists can't afford to to rent inner city spaces anymore, to live in the cities, and we need them there as social.
But then the government would probably argue that you're proposing a theatre at the back, that, you know, what's the difference between that and commercial units?
No, I'm saying that if you give the adequate funding to the GPO, they shouldn't have to come cap in hand begging for funding for the most iconic building on our island and the most important in the foundation of the state. And the idea of the whole area of Moore Street should be incorporated in. In 2020, I think it was, the O'Rahilly, the man that was shot, one of the leaders that was shot behind in a Moore Street, you know, they allowed his home to be torn down. It shouldn't have been. It should have been retained as part of our history. No other European country would allow their history to be actually tattered like this and disregarded and disrespected. I think it's scandalous that they would even think to do this, to make it for high-end retail. Like, who owns high-end retail? What revenue will go back into the Irish people from that? None. We need a building that we're proud of with a content and a historical influence inside that's reflecting the history of our land. And generate, give them the proper funding to get the marketing going, to get it advertised properly, to bring the tourists in, and to give facilities that we, like if the Titanic Centre can generate over 800,000 visitors and 5.9 million profit, pre-tax profit, profit on that, then you have to see that it's not being marketed or supported properly to generate the revenue it could generate as it is.
And do you think that that is the issue? You mentioned there a couple of historical sites that, do you think there is an issue within Ireland that we're not looking at our history and not preserving it, not just in relation to the GPO, but right across the country?
Completely. Take it locally in Letterkenny, the fight I've had about the Old Town Bridge where the flight of the Earls went over. You know, it's absolutely collapsing. And there's nobody. Is it because they're not from the area of the town that they realise and appreciate the history of it? The buildings that we've lost over the years, the sense of main streets in our villages across Donegal. You know, architects have to be sympathetic to retaining the street character, the facade of the street. And Ardra is a great example of that. If you go to Killarney, one of the reasons Killarney is the most successful tourist location in Ireland is because they've retained the shop fronts, the traditional, but Ireland, you know, emerged into as a commercial hub in the late 1800s. They've retained that. Why do people go to the Ulster American Folk Park? To see how we've evolved and how the history has changed and how the culture has changed over the years. To get that sense of history, of belonging and, you know, of personal attachment to an area. And that's what we're losing. And we need to be very careful because we're losing it fast. You think of the traditional thatch cottages, the vernacular cottage. How many are left across Donegal?
And you mentioned,
scary to think that in England they can enjoy and appreciate, and they actually generate so much tourism from the revenue of their history. And we're having to fight to do it here. You think of the Irish martyrs, one up in Drumkeen, Bishop Conor O'Devaney, hung, drawn and quartered in Dublin. You know, and the flats in Dublin that have just been pulled down that were named after him. You know, we've got to remain and retain that sense of history and culture and remember it and pass it on to the next generation.
And in terms of the Titanic Quarter that you mentioned there, it is a very significant building. It stands out. And when you think about yourself, when you go to Dublin, you do walk past the GPO and you don't think twice about the significance of it. But I suppose it's because, as you mentioned there, there's not enough significance being placed on the actual historical nature of it, and that does need to be done to highlight.
You're breaking up a bit of me, Michaela, there.
Can you hear me there, Mary T? I'm not sure whether it's Mary T's Zoom.
You're back.
Can hear me. I was just saying that, you know, yourself, when you're in Dublin, you walk past the GPO and you don't look twice at it. You don't think about the historical significance of it compared to the Titanic Quarter. I know it's out in a location on its own in Belfast, but I suppose, like, you know, that does relate to what the point you're making, that there isn't enough significance being placed on it. You know, there's so many people gathering there just willy-nilly as opposed to going there as a tourist attraction.
Well, for me, Michaela, I have to say that my children, it's a rite of passage. We stand and we touch the columns every time we're near Dublin. And we look at the bullet holes in the columns. And it's something that every child should reach up and feel that and know that people gave their lives for this country. A small band of men and women with a Donegal attachment. Mm-hmm. Because I remember chatting to one of the Kelly men up in Dublin, and his aunt was a nurse in one of the Dublin hospitals. And she left her job that day to go down to help the men in the GPO. It's, you know, it's stirring. It's really stirring. And we cannot allow our history to be lost at any cost.
Yeah. So there's a protest planned for next week, Mary T. You're hoping that people will come
Aunties
out and
force. Organising the demonstration outside the GPO on Tuesday, the 8th of July at 7 p.m. And I would, anybody that has any reason to get, if you have a free pass, get on the bus to Dublin if you can. If you have family there, please get people to go down there and support it if you can at all. And if you can't go there, then I have to say Patrick Trabean's coming himself to Letterkenny, or TD, and to the Clannery Hotel this Monday, the 8th, the 7th of July at 8 p.m. So he will be up himself in the Clannery Hotel on Monday night, the night before that, the 7th of July at 8 p.m. If you can come along, I would really appreciate it. We're going to talk about local issues and, again, issues like the infrastructure in Letterkenny and Donegal and our hospital and our sort. These are issues. We're losing our whole sense of community and, you know, that we need to be respectful of the community we're representing.
Yeah.
And our politicians are letting us down badly. That's my opinion.
And it just feeds, I think, all these issues locally recently, it just kind of creates more of an example of the disconnect between Donegal and Dublin here.
When you break down, nobody has ever yet actually given me a recent survey of the demographics of what's happening in our country at the moment. We need to look at this and learn from past examples of colonisation and, you know, and commercialisation. We need to look to see what we want to hold dearly. And we look at our politicians to do that. And I ask them to reconsider your political parties. You know, I was looking at the funding spent on elections there, and it was like 7 million spent in one election. You know, crazy figures. And we've got to say to ourselves, where are our focus points going to be as we go forward to leave as a legacy for the people coming behind us? And if we don't preserve and enshrine our historical buildings, our history and our cultural ideas or our cultural identities, then, you know, we leave no legacy. We have to look behind to go forward, to know where we've come from. And we're losing that. We've got to be very careful. And in Aintu, we will be proposing, we very much focus on keeping our history in our schools and keeping and teaching our history, and do the school trip to the GPO, encourage the teachers listening, anybody that's at home today, you know, how long is it since you took a class tour to the GPO in Dublin? Get those kids on that bus and take them to the GPO. You know, it's worth going to, and we must make more effort to do that.
Yeah. Mary T, thank you so much for joining us this morning. That is Mary T Sweeney, Aintu representative in Donegal. And a protest has been organised for next Tuesday in relation to opposition to the plans for the GPO in Dublin. A few of your comments coming in on that topic. There are fears that the commercial units, it could be generic chain stores or phone shops and vape shops, detracting from the GPO's grandeur and the dignity of its historical context. Another listener says, what will be better, honour our history? We need a more expansive revolutionary museum, an artist's hub or a cultural quarter focusing on Irish heritage. Another says, it will soon not matter about Irish history as nearly all foreigners are here now. Another says, the homeless people who are gathered outside the GPO and are fed there at certain times of the day must affect tourists entering the building. I remember avoiding them when I was up there. And the GPO is a large building with significant internal space, including courtyards and multiple stories of offices. Much of this space is currently underutilised or in need of modernisation. Commercial units could make efficient use of this valuable real estate. If you've an opinion on this, get in touch on 086 60 25000 or you can give us a call on 91 25000. Now, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Over the last few days, a number of people camped in the Gidor area on a beach, and there was a grim scene left in their wake. I'm joined now by Councillor Micheál Colmogill Osbaugh. Good morning to you.
Roger, Mike.
So, Councillor, what did you discover after this, what appears to be a group of people camped in the area?
Yeah, this is really unfortunate. And look, this has been happening nearly most summers now over this last good number of years, especially since COVID. I was informed by the public, by a number of people actually, to go down to Gidor, down to Marigallan and down to Bunavleigh, down in Carrick or Port Arthur. And I went down and I met members of the public down there where they showed me where people had come, a family actually had come and stayed for a night or two. And instead of taking all the rubbish with them, they left all the rubbish behind them. They were lighting campfires up against the rocks, which scorches the rocks and makes them black. They were doing their toilets, as I suppose everybody needs to, but doing it and leaving it there for the whole world to see, quite disgusting.
That is really that in itself is so unacceptable. It's never acceptable in any scenario.
Absolutely. Considering that we as a council provide a toilet within 2 minutes walk from where the campsite was. And people need to bear in mind here is that this land is privately owned land. This land belongs to somebody. I couldn't go anywhere, and nor should it be expected that you just land and start camping and that you just disrespect the whole place and you leave all your rubbish behind. There's bags of rubbish there now. That's now going to be left to the council to come along to pick it up. Very unfortunate, very disrespectful, and one of the most beautiful scenic places when you're sitting there looking out at an Ishutter and Ishmen, Umpuin, Gola. It's just an absolute gorgeous area and an area that the community invests massively into and keeping it clean. And as we all know, it's a special area of conservation. And the community, like I says, we use that area there to walk. We have done for generations. I myself would walk it on a very regular basis. And it's not acceptable. It's not acceptable, but people can come along and they think that they can camp there overnight, leave their rubbish without even asking permission. Sometimes we've seen in the past people coming with scramblers, wrecking up the dunes, and that has an environmental impact. And it just beggars belief that it's I was saying to Carolyn there earlier on, that it's only a couple of years ago that once landed there with a very small caravan they towed in the back of their car, and they stayed for a week or two. And then instead of taking the cheap camper van or the caravan they had with them, they just left it there and burnt it.
Crazy. And yeah. I know we talk about, you know, CCTV cameras being put in place, which for GDPR reasons, you know, won't work everywhere. But do you think, you know, there's such an increase in this, and this has been going on for quite a number of years, that, you know, a warden patrolling beaches would be feasible or would be warranted?
Well, I certainly wouldn't agree with CCTV like to be put on our beaches. I think beaches and places like that there should be private, and people should be able to roam freely without the thought of anybody monitoring them. I do believe, and we are having discussions, but yet again, they're only discussions, unfortunately, around bylaws, which we do need to engage with the local community, have a big public consultation process, and having a conversation around bylaws. Look, this isn't a one-off thing. This is happening all over the coastal communities. Again, down in Marigallan, there was a big fire, cans, broken bottles left overnight. And instead of cleaning up and taking your stuff away, and I believe sometimes it's not all people who are coming into our community. There's an element of locals as well. But I have to stress very, very, very clearly, this is an extreme small minority. Mm-hmm. Most people that come to our community are very respectful of the community. They come to the community because of its outstanding beauty, our language, our culture, who we are as people. And it's just very sad that a handful of people and a family and you know, would come along and just think that they can just shit everywhere and dump their crap everywhere and expect somebody else to pick it up.
But is that local then the next morning discovering that, you know, it's the total disgust and the disrespect for the local environment and for the locals who use that area?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, there was, at the time when this happened, it wasn't like they got up at 6 o'clock in the morning and buggered off. They'd done it blatantly in the middle of the morning. Mm-hmm. And other people watching them, and it just didn't care. But there's a broader discussion that has been ongoing. But again, it's only a discussion, and there has to be kind of more bite to what we're at here. We've seen a huge increase of camper vans coming into our area, and like I says, 99.9% of the people who come to our area with camper vans or camping are highly respectful of the area that they come into. But we've been seeing a massive footfall, and probably again since the staycations, people have started discovering how beautiful our coastal communities are and other parts of our country, county, and they've been kind of tending to come more often than maybe they would have. But the idea that you can come along and just park where you want, I couldn't do it in Ballyclia, I couldn't do it in Conde Corky, Galliff, Tipperaderin, or Dirra, or Belfast. So I can't expect people why, I can't understand why people think they can just do it here. So I'll give you an example where, as a local community, there's a place where local camper vans, and they have been for quite a very long time, and that's, I find it quite acceptable. Go down past the airport and they camp there and they swim there with the children, and that's, for me, that's pretty fine. And my understanding, they have landowner's permission. So maybe somebody lives up in Anagar or Mulladoo or Crawley or somewhere, and they go down there for a couple of nights, and that's fine. Like that, I wish I had a camper van myself. But there's another part of that peninsula down in Brage, right across from the airport, where people are parking, camper vans parking overnight. And this has only started really, really happening this last couple of years. And that area there is really important to us. Why it's really important to us? Because on that northern side of the runway, we've seen over this last number of years, and there's been fantastic work done by the airport there, to try to stop the tides coming right onto the runway. And we've seen that. We've seen where tides have come right into the runway. And my father-in-law, may his God be good to him, had spoke to me many a time when he was young how that whole Carriginia, Brage and Punta was an island when the tide came in. Now, I remember on the Blue Flag side, there was a pinch point there that broke through very strongly, and we had huge concerns around that high storms and a very aggressive storms could break them dunes. And we put a measure there, what the local community, what local schools and the airport, again, being very proactive on this, along with Corlea Conde Gunningall and Natasha, we were able to prevent that, and we were able to rebuild the marin grass, pull it, replant it and rebuild it. And it was a very, very successful project. Unfortunately, Maharoti wasn't so successful for us, and that's another project that has to be seriously looked at. But what we're finding is that the camper vans are coming into the area, and you could have 20, 10, 20, 30 of them parked there at night. That is damaging the ecosystem there. And we need to try to stop people parking there overnight. Clearly, speaking to and engaging with the airport there, they don't want, obviously, and they won't be stopping locals who have walked that strand for years and years, from continuing to walk there, and children kicking football or whatever. But campervans are having an impact on it, and that's the sad reality.
Just to interrupt you there, Councillor, 2 seconds. I'm joined by Brian on the line. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning.
So, Brian, what is your view in relation to the dumping of waste on beaches?
No, I think it's terrible. It's ridiculous. Like I'm a member of the Irish Caravan or Irish Camping and Caravan Club, mm-hmm. and we have 5 branches throughout Ireland. But anybody coming in and taking, if they can carry stuff from shops into an area, surely they can put it back in the bags they carried it in and take it back out with them again. you know, it's not hard. Like, our ethos in our club is to leave a place as clean as you got it, mm-hmm. or cleaner.
And Brian, do you believe that there are enough facilities within Donegal as it relates to camper vans?
Listen, the Wild Atlantic Way has been promoted, and the government here want to have it as one of the top five driving routes in the world within the next 5 years. But they have to supply facilities for the people that they're attracting into the place. Like, let's take it for example, Dunfanaghy would be one of the busiest places in Donegal, mm-hmm. and Donegal Town is another that for camper vans, but there are no facilities for them.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, a few mile over the road in Fulcara, which wouldn't be that busy with camper vans, there's a unit where people in camper vans can empty their toilets and everything.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous in the likes of Dunfanaghy that people can't, especially when there's a public toilet there, you know, because a unit can be put onto the side of a public toilet very easily to be able to empty toilets. And you know, and there's no doubt about it, you can guarantee that if people are there for 4 or 5 days at a time, that they're going to empty their toilet somewhere. Some people will go into the public toilets and do it. Some people will go in the middle of the night and they'll just empty it out over the side of the pier. Which is not acceptable, you know.
So do you think that this lack of facilities is leading to this then, that if there were more facilities, or there's still always going to be that minority of people who disregard rubbish and have no disrespect, or that disrespect the local environment?
No, as Micheál said, there are toilets available down in the likes of Marigallen,
mm-hmm.
And people just have to walk, you know, to walk a short distance to get to them. But they're not doing that. Like, it's unacceptable what people are doing, you know, that people are going behind rocks and doing what they do, and then there's toilet paper flying everywhere, and they're leaving their feces and all behind them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is ridiculous. But the government have to be proactive and supply facilities as well. You know, and a facility, especially for camper vans, for emptying toilet, it's not very big. It's not much bigger than a bucket,
mm-hmm.
with a lid on it, and it just goes into a pipe. You just lift the lid, empty the toilet cassette for a camper van, and usually there's a little pedal to push to flush it.
And how does Donegal, Brian, compare to other parts of the country?
Donegal is good compared to other parts of the country. And Donegal is very, but some parts of the country are not very good,
mm-hmm.
and the stuff, you know, that they don't accept their bylaws. Like for instance, Galway is nearly impossible to park in even during the day, because they have bylaws in it, so you can't just pull into Galway,
mm-hmm.
and go and visit the city. You have to park well outside the city and get a bus in or something.
Well, Brian,
Donegal is generally very, very good.
Yeah, but more. We just need more facilities.
Yeah.
And in terms of just, you know, the disposal of rubbish, is it normal size litter bins, or are there industrial size litter bins available?
Well, Ireland is different to what England is, or France, or something like that, because our rubbish facilities are private.
Mm-hmm.
So there are, you know, there aren't as many rubbish bins as there would be in other parts of the world.
Yeah.
But if you take, like, anybody in a motorhome, there's usually a fairly big boot in them. It's not hard
to take it home.
It's not hard to take your stuff home with you. And like for anyone touring Donegal, if you're touring the Wild Atlantic Way, there are five of the public service yards, the recycling yards,
mm-hmm.
are within a kilometre off the Wild Atlantic Way, and it's not hard to look them up. And say the likes of Dunloe is just up around the corner from the Wild Atlantic Way. It's mm-hmm. not hard to put your stuff in a bag and go in there, and it's only €4 to get rid of a bag.
Yeah, so there's,
you know, a big bag
means and ways, yeah, definitely around it.
Yeah, and anyone travelling Donegal, like, you're going to be passing one of those public service yards once every 2 or 3 days if you're, you know, if you're travelling Donegal, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's not hard to get rid of your rubbish properly.
Yeah, totally unacceptable. Brian, thank you so much for that input. Councillor McGill-Asbaugh, you wanted to come in there on that.
Yeah, just in team go home longer to Brian. And I fully agree with Brian. Myself and Brian would have conversations around this on a very, very regular basis, and his input and his views are hugely important in this discussion. Massively important in this discussion, as is the camperman family, our community. But we commissioned a report a number of years ago, and I think it'd be worthwhile asking the council to come on, you know, maybe the likes of Gary Martin and that there, to kind of to talk that report through and listen to what Brian was saying there. I think it's really important. So if you take the Glantys Municipal District area, and if you take the toilet part of it, where Muharoti, we have a place where there that people can dispose of. Out in the Muhara, Hugh Jard and the Mahari Centre there, who do fantastic work out there. And if anybody's ever out that way, Strandbar, definitely drop in and say hello to them there. But what I was saying is we don't have enough facilities or nowhere near it. So, mm-hmm. for example, if you look, if you're camping in the Angaeltacht, where we are, and if you want to use the public toilet, say, down that we have down at the airport, we don't even have staff put in place to clean them. And if you're in any of our islands, and we're working towards public toilets in our islands, but again, we're left with expecting the public to clean up somebody else's mess. And that's not acceptable. And I think what we've done is there was a massive big push to attract camper vans and people into West Donegal and to other coastal communities, but not putting the infrastructure in. And that's not acceptable. So in my own village in Anagra here, if there was a camper van, if there was a service put in place in the public car park there, we noticed that camper vans do park there at night this last year or two, that, you know, and have a plug-in, a few pounds to charge. That is a footfall that you can go into Duffy's or into Sharky's or Cashinore or Danny Money's or anywhere there.
Yeah, it's a benefit and to the local economy.
And spend a few pound or spend a few pound in their local shop, the cooperative there. But we also need to bear in mind that there are businesses out there like Sleepy Hollows and down in Gidor and other places that are trying to make a living out of this here. And people coming into the area, I think they have to look at what's available here and to be respectful. But the big thing here for me...
But that report, sorry, just to go back to that camper van report, that was done quite a few years ago now, you know.
It was.
Surely we would need another, you know, report carried out on this, because as you mentioned earlier, the amount of people that now travel to Donegal, and we see the influencers posting about Donegal, that there's more and more people coming to the county, that we need to take all that into consideration now.
Yeah, we do. And we need to look at what we commissioned and what we implemented in that report. And that's why I'm saying it'd be worthwhile maybe getting a discussion going in relation to this. Look, there's a wider discussion here, a wide discussion here. And there's a massive, huge focus coming from the likes of Udras na Gaeltachta and Corley Chondaig an Ngall, Fáil Chéireann and others. And I'm not taking any away any of their good work and their big, you know, their focus that they have, like this Friday out Stéan Éireann Mór will be launching our Blue Way programme. Great work getting done there, and Gurmíle Maith the core coming there and more, and I'm glad to be very, very much a part of that. Been calling for this for a very, very long time. But we need to have a wider discussion around tourism and what is tourism, how does tourism impact our community. So for us as a local community here, we're finding now that cost of monthly rental, if you're lucky enough to get a home or a house to rent, it's ridiculous. It's 1,200 to 1,500 euros a month at very, very high prices. If you're looking at Airbnb, people coming in and they're expected to pay anything up to a couple of £100 per night just to rent Airbnb. And that has an offshoot on us in terms of the cost of rental for our young ones long term, because the government obviously is failing in the housing situation in terms of not building enough homes for people, the cost of building homes. And then when you become a tourist hotspot, that has a huge impact environmentally, socially and economically on us. And we need to look at who benefits, and not everybody benefits. And I hear the argument, people saying, oh, well, there's jobs created. Yeah, there are jobs created, but let's look at them jobs. They are minimum wage jobs. They're seasonal jobs, which will not leave any family being able to afford a mortgage or the rent that we have there. at the moment in the area, and we need to force the Dublin government position of reducing rent for our community. And that,
well, I'm sure that's a discussion you will continue. I'm sure that's a discussion you will continue at many council meetings now to come. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. That is Councillor.
Take an opportunity to wish the Phelan and Inis Bofin all the best that's coming up. So anybody that is in the West, Sireltat, and there's a number of Phelan coming up there between Minleke and Inis Bofin, make your way to them festivals, because it takes a lot of work, a lot of organising by the community on a voluntary basis, as we all know. Gromahigath and Namahara.
Mahara, yes, festival, absolutely.
Which you'll be at yourself, I'm sure.
Definitely. That is Councillor Micheál Colmagill Asperg there. And sorry for keeping you there, Councillor Michael McClafferty. How are you?
Good, Michaela. Good, thanks.
We were discussing there earlier CCTV cameras in relation to illegal dumping. What's your view on this?
I think, Michaela, genuinely, there need to be more cameras up all through the place. Like I was saying to Shannon there, obviously, particularly places like beaches and so on, as agreeing with what Micheál said, they're private places, mm-hmm. and that it's not the place for them, and nobody's suggesting that. But as I said to Shannon there, definitely on our roads, our approach roads, our approach road to the beach, say, for example, your half mile or your mile out road that's tunnelling down to your beach, there could be cameras there to see who's going down and so on.
Yeah, and I suppose that would capture registration plates then, that maybe you could narrow down who would be responsible.
Yeah, well, it's no different to yourself there on a Tuesday when you see the Garda slot. It comes up every so often, the sergeant of the day or whatever, the guard's on, is asking for dash cam footage in certain areas. Mm-hmm. And I believe with all this illegal dumping and all, not just beaches, hills, mountains, muckish everywhere else, or Mahary, or Anagri, or Micheál's own direction, all the directions where all the rubbish has been dumped over this last number of years and counting, we all know them, hotspots and such, and new places appearing from time to time. But I do believe, and I mentioned this before to the council as well, I do believe, Michaela, there should really be cameras on the likes of the dual carriageway coming in, into the Kenny, into our main arteries, not just the dual carriageway, all our main arteries. The dual carriageway, the Balbuffet, the Dunlows, the Fulcares, and so on. Catching all the cars basically coming into the arteries, into the towns and villages and so on, and it would be a huge help then narrowing things down then if something went wrong, a crime or us. As like we're talking about here at the minute now with our dumping on our beaches, it would certainly narrow things down quite a bit anyway. Because otherwise, if there's nothing there to capture registrations, capture vehicles at least, the type of vehicle that was there, it's very difficult to identify what's going on. And particularly, God forbid, if a serious crime or something got up, it would be, you know, all these things are vital in that fight against crime. Because as we all know at the minute, obviously with this new policing plan, we've less Gardaí about, we've less patrol cars about, we have less checkpoints, so on, etc. And there are certain elements just of unwanted. Are just feeling that we're getting the free run of it. We can do what we want. Donegal's an easy target. We can shoot into that county as we watch for a couple of hours, shoot out again across the border or borders, whatever the case may be. And the chances of getting stopped is as little to none. And that's what we don't want either. So I think we need to start thinking outside the box here as such and start to get smarter ourselves and come up, be more creative and come up with more creative ideas. And stuff like this, we, myself and others, we will be bringing forward to the new policing committee now when it's formed again, hopefully in September, I believe. Or I understand anyway.
Councillor Michael McClafferty, we're just up against the clock, heading towards the news at 10. So thank you so much for that. And no doubt that's another conversation that will continue as well.